Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
There's a whole fleet of them. Look on the ASA. My gosh. They're all going against the wind.
It was basically a cube with inside of sphere where the points of the cube were touching outside of the sphere.
So this isn't anything that just is limited to the United States. It's a worldwide phenomenon.
Have you ever looked up to the skies and seen something you can't explain? Or walked deep in the forest and sensed something watching you? Do you believe in an afterlife or a hidden veil that can communicate with the living? Then you need Shadows of Your Mind magazine. Download all issues completely free at shadowsmagazine.co.uk. Shadows of Your Mind, where your search for the answers begins.
Coming back from the advert for the wonderful Shadows of Your Mind magazine, of course, written, published, edited, created, anything you can name is done by Dave Partridge, which is on the podcast just now. So please make sure that you're following Shadows Magazine on Twitter, you're downloading the magazine. There's a lot of great content that if you've not seen, you don't realize, trust me, how good that magazine is. So we're going to come back and go straight in with John. So Undead Gaucho, John, we're going to look at the theory of crypto and ultra-terrestrial. So the idea that there are beings that share this planet with us, crypto, as I was just getting cleared up as well there, crypto, that the beings, no doubt more technologically advanced than us, at least in some aspects, are here, have been the same amount of time, if not longer, share the planet, and they are potentially buzzing about in these craft, or ultra-terrestrial, that we have beings who potentially are evolve differently, potentially higher spiritually on the chain, but again, that they share this planet in some way. And I think this does tie in a little bit with the dimensional reality theories too. And this is one of my personal favorites, if I want to say the, use the word favorites there, because Lou Elizondo famously mentioned mankind, and I'll come back to that with Dan after I speak with John first. But yeah, so crypto and ultra-terrestrial, what's your thoughts that we are not alone on this planet?
I have to agree with, you know, I think it's a mix of both of those. It's crypto and ultra-terrestrial, because I would think they would be higher spiritually. You know, they'd have a better understanding of conscious. And we know that in Close Encounters, like supposedly they can talk to you telepathically, and they can walk through walls and do all these kinds of things. It may be technology that they're using, but I am lately, the thing is, like, over the years, you go back and forth, right, with different theories, different ideas. You start siding with one more than the other. But as of late, I've just been thinking that they've been here this whole time, and they've been here before us. I mean, I'm a big believer in the ancient astronaut hypothesis, and I think that if you look at religion as a whole around the world, and the customs that have sort of molded us and shaped us into what we are today, the only way you could ever explain that, other than being a fable or being some sort of things like stories made up completely, ancient comic books would be that they were coming into contact with the phenomenon and they were trying to write it down and express it and tell the story of what they were coming into contact with, the little understanding that they had of, maybe not the little understanding, the current understanding that they had of reality. But if you look at those stories, all those beings, those gods or those angels or whatever, they were here influencing us before we even evolved, right? You got the Adam and Eve kind of story where it's obvious that like they're literally like in a little, you know, the zoo theory we were talking about earlier, we brought up for a second. That's a perfect example right there of like a zoo. That's literally like a zoo, the story of Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. Yeah, I mean, I think it's a mix of both. I think it's hard to ignore and deny that they've been here this whole time.
And
the same, yeah, the same craft, same everything. You know what I mean? It's just.
And for me, what, and Dan, I'm going to pick up in a second about interpretations and how I've interpreted something. Lou Elizondo, famously in one of his YouTube interviews, I think his early interviews, he basically talks to the camera about what if it wasn't mankind, but mankind's. And, you know, it wasn't just us, in the sense that there's another almost humankind potentially on this planet. And I think as well, when Tom DeLonge, particularly when TTSA was first on the scene, talked about the phenomenon having scary aspects to it. And I think one of the lines he used a few times was, we would have to learn to live with. And I wonder, is he directly getting at the fact that we would literally have to learn to live with, we don't own this planet. We aren't the higher species, not in the universe, the galaxy, or the solar system, but we aren't the higher species on this planet. We are literally the little brothers, potentially, to something else. And I think that's the route that's potentially gone. Dan, I'll bring you in at that point then on crypto and ultra-terrestrial, because this is something we have discussed on a few occasions. I'm going to talk now so I don't have to edit out the silence that Dan left there. But yeah, sorry, so that's it. Okay. Dan, so yeah.
I said the most amazing thing. You missed it. I can't remember.
Oh,
now.
No. Go on. What was it again?
If it comes to me, I'll let you know. I love both these ideas. The altered terrestrial idea, I think, is... it touches on something that John said there, the way we talk about things, old stories, in kind of a mythic way, and we'll often kind of use the same or different terms to talk about the same stuff. So, for example, you touched on it, but the flood myth. We know that all around the world, the flood myth is common in lots and lots of different religions. And it just points to it being an event. A flood happened. You know, even if you want to strip everything else away, a flood happened. When there was a civilization that wiped out that civilization, these are the stories we're told. Then you look at the science angle, and they keep finding that we've been hit by meteors. One of the most recent would be the Younger Dryas hypothesis, where we were hit by a meteor about 12,000 years ago. And that meteor kind of hit a bunch of other kind of rocks into the atmosphere that took out a load more people, and it was almost, you know, a complete extinction event. And when you think something like that's going to happen, you think people are going to go underground because that's what we would do. And some of those people might even have access, if they were a highly advanced civilization, they might even have access to some of the technology. They won't be able to build it when they come out the other side or show anyone else how to build it, but for a while they'd be fairly capable. And I think it's quite possible that the survivors from something like that emerged, built something like Göbekli Tepe to teach survival skills, agricultural skills, that kind of stuff, so that humanity could get back on its feet. Now the question is, while we were doing that, what were they doing? They would have developed. So if we're talking 12,000 years, and they started with, just as an example, a Tic Tac, what would they have now? So I think all of these massive kind of technological amazements that we see when we see these objects in the sky could just be explained by people who went through a cataclysm were further ahead of us than we are now. And we're just amazed by them. And they've just been living underground as they learned to do during about, I think it was about 1,300 years that the events kind of kept happening over. So yeah, they could still be around, I think.
You touched on something, Dan, I just want to bring up, because I was going to mention it, that do you think then that these beings potentially would, again, if they're on this planet, they wouldn't want us messing about with nuclear weapons because they know that we're not the most stable, and that's why they potentially hang about nuclear carrier groups such as the Princeton and the Nimitz out at sea and just check what they're doing and regularly show us that they can turn on and off these weapons, because they won't let us use them, because we're not only destroying our planet, we're destroying theirs. And that's what they're kind of giving us, these signs that, do you know what? You're not going to do that. So yeah, let's just drop it. And again, maybe when we discuss, as I've done recently, I think we touched on it, Dan, in our episode, that episode 20, we reviewed the phenomenon, that maybe the government stopped looking for what these are because they did find out what it was. And, you know, they stockpile all these weapons, but ever since Hiroshima and, you know, Nagasaki, they haven't really used them. We've not had that nuclear war that's always been threatened. And maybe that's because we wouldn't be able to have, I mean, hopefully that would be a great pro of this whole situation, but we wouldn't be able to have that happen because these things would come up and go, do you know what? Nah, that would be when they step in.
You know what? I'm not sure they would step in, you know. If they've helped us before, they can help us again. And if we're going to be stupid enough to shoot ourselves in the feet, then I think they would probably let us go and start over. Not in a malicious way, but just in a, we've done it to ourselves.
Are they going to let us wipe ourselves out with nuclear weapons, though? Because that's going to affect their planet.
That's where the kind of clinch comes in, really, isn't it? It's the effects on them that we're having.
Trigger a flood.
So, well, the flood was kind of, I guess it could have been. But, you know, the flood comes from meteor myths. And if you look at, like, the Aboriginal kind of stories, and they talk about the rainbow serpent, and that kind of is a harbinger of, like they say, unity, for example. And the way I look at that is that the meteor would cause unity because we'd all have to work together to survive it. It's not saying, you know, the stars say that there's going to be unity. It's literally a situation we're put in where unity is the only way through. And I think if there was a civilization that had been through that and learned that unity was the only way through, that they'd see that we're maybe a little too selfish to be kept around.
I wouldn't argue against that. Speaking of selfish, I'm going to bring in here, you're a one-man magazine. So,
yeah, I'm totally selfish.
We've talked about quite a lot there already. So what's your take on the ultra-terrestrial theory?
Well, I kind of like the crypto-terrestrial because, you know, leading on from what Dan was saying and what John was saying about the, you know, the flood myths. Well, obviously they're not myths because we have evidence that there were, you know, these giant catastrophic floods at least 12,000 years ago, and they may have happened, you know, at subsequential periods in the past as well. You know, there's a book by a guy called W. Scott Elliott in the early 20th century, I think, or maybe the late 19th. It's called The Story of Atlantis and Lost Lemuria. And that focuses on, obviously, Atlantis and Lemuria and this whole those two civilizations. But the way that they were kind of separated by continual giant floods, you know, going back like 80,000 years, 90,000 years, even further than that, like 300,000 years. And he kind of focused on the evolution of these two tribes, the Atlanteans and the Lemurians, and how they kind of degraded as time went on. Because at once, at one point they, you know, the pinnacle of civilization, Atlantis, city of gold and all that. You know, the ultra technology, flying cars and everything else, flying from, you know, one space to the another using nuclear power. And then they totally imploded on themselves. Where was I going? But yeah, this book focuses on kind of the last great deluge that killed off the Lemurians and the Atlanteans. But there's nothing to say that remnants from those societies did go underground, took their technology underground, and then came up onto the surface again at different points in time. I mean, we got the myths of the Anunnaki, who's, you know, they're said to have come from space anyway, but you've got other myths as well that say they came down from the highlands of Tibet. And they, you know, they found kind of like the plateaus and the plains of Iran and, well, Persia and all that kind of area, Mesopotamia. And that's how they started teaching the remnant tribes how to farm the land, how to create a civilization, how to create some kind of government system, and gave them the ancient knowledge that they'd had before. And then they went again.
It's, you know, funny. You've all talked about like floods or water or, you know, and technology and whatnot. And
this is how obvious it is. We're so all like, we've got this.
I sent a friend, I'll just say, a message a few days ago just asking about. So more and more the focus, and we've talked about this in a few different shows, and John, we spoke about it, that the US is, like it or not, the driving force behind the UAP movement at the moment. It really is. It's miles ahead of anyone else, okay? And obviously UAP media are more and more getting ready to launch that, and that's why. However, they seem to really be pushing the naval aspect of UFOs, and that it's the Navy that's in charge of it, and it's all these incidents of what happened out at sea, bodies of water. I then look at the UK having no interest in the subject, it seems, but after the US announced a UAP task force that's being run by, or that it's going to be run out of the naval office, excuse the terminology, I'm probably mixing up there. The UK announced their biggest ever naval budget out of nowhere. And I just wonder, is there any correlation between that happening and the UK in the background going, do you know what, with what may potentially come out, let's start spending a little bit more here?
It might be that, but then you never know, that our battleships and cruisers might be so past their use by date that we actually just need to upgrade them.
Although I'll add to that then that, and this might just be putting two and two together and getting 17 or 4.5, my new number I made up. But they did announce the other day that we're going to start fitting laser weapons to our UK battleships, sharks, and cruisers. Yeah. Well, laser. Yeah, sharks with laser beams on their heads. But we are going to start putting laser weapons on our battleships, which, you know, again, as a weapon, and you can see these weapons being tested on YouTube and stuff like that. So they are out there. They do exist, and no doubt they've been in operation for quite a while. But again, if you were going to potentially have to defend, or, you know, if we're going down the threat narrative route, that you wanted to attack anything that was going to be like a tic-tac, that may have to be the sort of weapon you use. I think the it was talked about on Unidentified, wasn't it, when the Italians mentioned having using frequencies and whatnot to attack the craft. Dan, am I right? Because we talked about that, didn't
depleted,
we? Depleted uranium. And yeah.
Yeah, that was it.
So we're talking rabbit holes. I don't want to get too much into that, but that's what I'm starting to look and go, maybe there's something in that. But
yeah, I mean, it's all right having lasers on ships, but you still need the actual hardware to be able to keep up with a tic-tac or whatever that's flying at 3,000, 15,000 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Well, some people would say they weren't flying that fast and it was just, you know.
Well, what's the average velocity of a seagull?
A hypersonic seagull.
Yeah.
Oh god, you know, I'm from California, guys. Seagulls don't fly that fast.
No. Unless there's food about and they dive bomb, like,
unless the seagull ate like a a bag of crack or something. But
yeah, and these seagulls are also tracked coming in from the atmosphere as well, which is an interesting case in point. But they come in from the atmosphere. The event, what gets talked about is the event. We know they were tracked coming in from a certain altitude by various organisations on the coast, as much as I found out when I spoke to Kevin, Gary and PJ Hughes on the first round table. So they come in from space, not to say they started from there, but they came in from space, hovered a distance away over a course of 7 to 10 days. The Nimitz Princeton event, I think a lot of people do think, mainly because of Dan's badge, that it's a very good artwork, but it's the 14th of November. However, it happened over, what, 7 to 10 days that they were there and they just hovered. But when they left, they were tracked again. And how much of that data is out there, it remains to be seen, or if we ever find that out. But these things went somewhere and it wasn't back into space. So again, you look at bodies of water, and Unidentified Season 1 focused so much on the Catalina Islands and that area, UAP Expeditions. Are very keen in going around that area as well. There's a lot of talk, right or wrongly, with them around potential whale migrations and those animals being a part of why these UAP are there. Again, yeah. Bodies of water, lost civilizations, starts to go down the rabbit hole a little bit, but go on, John.
I was going to say, let's just be like super, it's super obvious, right? If the craft have transmedium travel, right? That's, we know that.
Yeah.
If you're an intelligent race and you don't want to be seen, the best place for you to hide on this planet is in the ocean. Because first of all, we don't even really pay attention to the ocean.
That's a lot of it.
Yeah. Like there's a lot of it. And then they probably know exactly where to go and hide. They could probably just like park in the ocean. Have you guys seen the Turkish UFO? The one that's filmed over like the beach, it's like where they zoom in.
The one that's like zoomed in.
I think you can see the two beings in the window. Yeah. Like,
isn't that funny? Because they're like, those are the types of cases where I go, like, if this is real, how intelligent can they be? They don't see the guy over there with the, I mean, he's super far away probably, but if their technology is like set, you know, they must have some like alarm system or something that lets them know when we're coming close. If there's just a guy out there filming them with their windows open, hanging out on the top of the ship, having a cigarette in the middle of the night.
I'll give you the inverted opinion though, that they probably looked and went, should we not put the window up? Nah, they put this on their YouTube, but no one watches, no one believes them anyway, so it's fine.
It's maybe true. It's like teenagers with their first car, you know, they just want to go out and impress.
Wouldn't that be funny?
Yeah.
But that footage, I saw that footage such a long time ago, and I keep seeing it pop up and come back and come back.
It's never been debunked, has it? Officially, it's never.
No, and I think I read somewhere, this could be wrong, that the Turkish government like looked into it and they actually said like that they think it's legitimate.
Wow.
Like, but who knows?
You know, it's, I mean, I read that online. As it stands, it stood the test of time, hasn't it? What I'm going to ask then, gents, before we move on to the next topic, is again your scores. So come to Dan first on this one. I'm expecting something low, maybe a 3 or 4 here, potentially. Dan might surprise us. But Dan, on a scale of 1 to 10/11, where are you going with the ultra crypto terrestrial theory?
Very, very fond of this idea. 10. this is what I mean. I can't get away from it. 10 for me. The only thing I'd add to what I've said already is that Lou comment where he spoke about mankind in the same video. He says, you know, what does it mean to be human? Does it mean to have arms or to have legs or to have a body? And that to me was the standout. And ever since I heard him say that, I wonder if we're dealing with something that is, you know, a consciousness without a meat suit attached to it, essentially. And then suddenly you have kind of all this other phenomenon come rushing in, like ghosts and poltergeists and things like that.
So you think he was dropping one of his Easter eggs in there?
Possibly.
I like
Trickster.
I like it. John?
Yeah, you got it.
One to 10?
10.
10?
Yeah. I mean, Daniel said it. We all said it. We're all on the same page, I think. I might be wrong, but I think Dave's going to go like 9 or 10.
Go on then, Dave, to finish off.
Well, yeah, John's probably right, actually, because, you know, of all the reports of, you know, the Nazis went looking for Agatha, and you got, you know, the legends regarding Shambhala. I mean, even Richard Schreiber, controversial and crazy his theory on the Darrow were living in tunnels underground. We know less about what is under our feet and in our seas than we do anywhere else, I guess. And the fact that there could be a civilization with, you know, living in the catacombs or, you know, living in these mass sprawling cities under the ground is not that far beyond science fiction, I don't think. So, yeah, let's go 9 out of 10.
Cool.
Let's go 9.3.
Don't ruin my scale any more than Dan already has. with his 11. Awesome. Okay, so next one, and I'm guessing potentially this would be the least popular one, but it's definitely one that merits discussion. And we'll start off, Dave, with you on this, that this, the phenomenon is top secret human tech, that there is no ET, interdimensional, there's none of that happening here. This is us. It's US, American, Russian, it's someone. What's your thoughts, Dave?
I think it'd be the most disappointing and at the same time the most incredible theory.
Explain.
Purely because the most disappointing thing is that we'd be alone on this earth as far as we know. You know, there'd be nothing else out there. You look up to the skies and it's just inky blackness and there is nothing else going on. There's no such thing as the paranormal. There's no multi-dimensions. We are just here on a rock, a waterlogged piece of rock, basically. The flip to that is that would be so scary that someone has developed this tech so far that they're still keeping it secret. And the fact that they have kept it secret for so long, you have to wonder how many of these craft do they have in storage somewhere? And when or what is the purpose of them actually using that? So it'd be, yeah, like I said, it'd be disappointing if it was ours. But at the same time, the scientific advancement would be absolutely incredible because then, you know, world destruction aside, if they could use that kind of technology for the good of humanity, then, you know, we have possibly a bright future.
And this ties in with various different theories, but that some people have said that, and this is what I like about the fact the Tic Tac video, the gimbal video, that these came out and have been certified as unidentified by the US Navy. And, you know, like Lou says, whatever those are real. So that Tic Tac was real. David Framer had that experience. The co-pilot had that experience. So if this was the case, that this was human tech, then it's more than likely the US government was testing these craft on its own soldiers and own vessels, which nuclear powered. Human error comes into it, which can always happen, that's a disaster. And how do you explain that?
I mean, that'd just be, I mean, sure, you want to test your newest tech against the best that you've got. But then, yeah, like you said, human error, it just takes, you know, David Fravor or one of his wingmen to go in the wrong direction, make a wrong call, and then suddenly you got something hurtling into a nuclear powered cruiser, and then, you know, seas are boiling and the coast of California is wiped out.
Absolutely.
And then there's a nuclear winter and we're all paying the price for a flock of seagulls.
And we know those Californian seagulls don't fly fast, so they're all getting cooked as well. our Californian seagull expert, though, John, let me bring you in on that one then. So, top secret human tech. Are you with Dave that it would be the most disappointing of the hypothesis to come true?
Yeah, 100%. And I have to say, like, the only reason why I don't believe that that is the case is the correlation and the similar sightings that we've had throughout the many years. You know what I mean? Like Lou Elizondo says, the five observables that in a lot of cases come up from years and years and years ago, where it would be completely ridiculous for a craft to have that kind of flight capability. And people are like, well, maybe they kept it secret for something. I'm like, dude, that would never exist. And if it did, there's like a secret club of people that have this technology that are just using it for what? I don't know. And that would be kind of sad, definitely.
Do you know, let me play devil's advocate here. One thing for me that would lean towards some of this being human technology, albeit very advanced, is how poor some of these craft look. And particularly when you go back a little bit in time, that they, and this is something that I think you guys right back at the start were talking about, that you see what you want to see, or the craft can make you see what it wants you to see and can be perceived by different people in different ways, that some of these craft look really old fashioned, and they do look like the old, you know, as my Goblin Problems outro is Sean Cahill, which is an awesome piece of music, which I love. But he talks about, you know, hubcap designed by Chaucer, and some of them do look like hubcaps being thrown up in the air, or the old like kind of dreidels, and the designs are really odd and just look a bit square. And if you're going, you know, when you go shopping for a car and you can get your really basic, I don't want that, that looks ready to break down model, or you get your top of the range sports models, you know, your Bob Lazar sports model. There seems to be such a range of these craft that if they were ours, maybe that would explain some of the kind of poor designs. But then you've still got the fact that they can defy physics.
I agree with you on the poor design thing, but I also think like we have this idea of in our minds of what something advanced in technology should look like, you know? And if we're going to talk about the sports model from Bob Lazar, I mean, it was supposedly the inside of the craft really had nothing in there, and it had like some slots for your hands and some chairs that were the size for children. I mean, it's pretty unimpressive, but at the same time, we don't know exactly how they're piloting the craft. You know, it could be that they're actually using something that we can't even grasp for the propulsion systems. Cause it would seem like too, in some cases, like that they're using their consciousness to somehow pilot the craft. Or they have a neural link and they're from the future and they're basically all created by Elon Musk, and it's what's going to happen in 50, in 100 years.
It's the Planet of the Apes ending, they're coming back, and it was us all along. Dan, bring you in on it. Top secret human tech being the outcome here then.
So, I mean, in a word, no.
Okay.
Let's put it bluntly. My explainer would be, I think it was Danny Silver that made this point on Twitter, that you're not gonna spend millions looking for something in your own inventory. Like that's insanity. Like people want to talk about military people making mistakes, maybe seeing glare on the canopy. Now the comedy of errors is expanding to include a whole budget given to a program to look for something that they already own. And no, that's nonsense. Then we'll pair with that with just to put it in perspective. So according to my reasoning there, it doesn't belong to America. So it could reasonably be in other countries. But then when we look at the defense spending, and I know it's not a complete numbers game, they could have a genius who just kind of upended all of physics. But America in, I think it was 2017, I'm looking at, $610 billion they spent on defense spending. That is more than China, Russia, Saudi Arabia, India, France, UK, and Japan combined. So if it's not America's, it's not theirs.
Yeah. Literally, look, I'm a proud American. I'm not that kind of person. But if it's not America's, I mean, come on, guys. It's got to be you know, the Russian or the Chinese, but like, let's be realistic. I mean, it's the same kind of flight capabilities happening over and over and over again for years and years and years. And people are like trying to say that it's some kind of test drone. And I'm like, that makes no sense at all. Makes no sense. Not if you've looked into the subject, it makes no sense.
I think drones are one of the worst things that's happened to the UFO subject in recent years, because it's now the default of anything that can be easily disproved outside in the mainstream. It's a drone. It'll be a drone. It'll be a 150-foot drone.
It's no longer a Chinese lantern the size of a, you know, school bus. But you have to remember, like, Operation Paperclip.
I was going to bring that in, Dave. I'm glad you have.
You know, you got the Americans and the Russians and the British, Canadians and the French as well. You know, it wasn't just the Americans and the Russians. They're all scrambling to get German technology because they knew that the Germans were so far advanced of, you know, what the Allies had at the time, that they wanted those scientists, they wanted those blueprints, and they wanted the tech if they could get their hands on it. I mean, the Americans and the Russians were the first ones there. The Brits were sat around having a cup of tea, by all accounts, because we were the last ones to the party and we ended up with the scraps. But we don't know what the Russians have, because nobody's ever been able to get information out of Russia, you know, as much as we have out of America. I mean, that's because Russia is so closed off. But who's to say that, you know, they haven't developed something? But at the same time, you know, America's black budget is well known for keeping so many things hidden. I mean, look at Skunk Works. Northrop and Douglas and Boeing and Martin and all those, you know, all those aerospace companies that were developing things in the 60s and the 70s and the 80s.
When I interviewed Tim McMillan, I think it was one of the first times that he mentioned the Department of Energy. And that was something that kind of dropped on me, that, you know, if everyone's looking at all these different aspects of the military industrial complex and who could be hiding different projects. And Tim said, if that was me, and there is a potential object that, as John talked about, how are these things propelled and fueled, then that's energy. It would be the Department of Energy, which is huge. And no one was really looking for a long time at the Department of Energy. And Tim McMillan said, I'm sure it was again on my podcast, that he FOIA requested the Department of Energy, and the first response was, why are you writing to us about this? It wasn't, we don't have anything, but, you know, they were like, and he was like, well, that would be the most sensible thing for me, because we're talking about an energy source that would potentially change, you know, humanity. One of the humanities.
And let's not forget, like, the research of Nikola Tesla and Thomas Townsend Brown as well. You know, their research notes are hidden away. Tesla's flat was notoriously raided by the FBI so they could get, you know, whatever he had in his safe in that cheap hotel that he died in. And Thomas Townsend Brown was proposing anti-gravity craft back in the 50s and the 40s. So, you know, I'm not saying that's we've developed so far as to get a tic-tac or anything like that, but, you know, the scientists have been looking at this for a long time. So there's no reason why we haven't got, you know.
Before I come to ask you for your scores on this one, The biggest disappointment for me on that would be that Chris Mellon lied to us all, because he has got to the point now of openly saying that this is not US, this is not Russian, this is not Chinese. And very recently on his Stars and Stripes appearance, the military podcast he was on, that was really good. He actually came out and said it would be good for this subject if we could, and I'm paraphrasing here, if we could rule out ETs as one of the possibilities, but given the evidence that's there and given what's happening, you can't. And it would be the best thing and the easiest thing for UAPs would be, do you know what, here's why we can prove it's not extraterrestrial, ultra-terrestrial, it's not another race, another set of beings. But they can't do that, and that's Chris Mellon saying that. So for me, that's enough to poo-poo the top secret human tech, although I don't doubt we've got some good stuff. As people like to claim, the TR-3B thing that Dan knows is one of my pet hates.
you got the Lockheed Astra as well. Sorry, John.
No, I was going to say, the TR-3B, is that Why did they say, like, maybe that's what you saw?
No, so what Dan's gonna, but so what gets me a little bit with people claiming, so I know there's patents for it, okay, but people will very quickly claim, I don't even know if I should say this, oh yeah, so that's TR-3B, you don't know that, you can't yeah. claim, you don't know what that craft is, human, extraterrestrial, drone, whatever, people shouldn't claim that kind of stuff because you don't know. Like I say, I saw a black triangle back last year, just around about this time of year, and I got the feeling just at the time, it was weird that I, again, maybe because I'm seeing it in person, and it was again only 100 feet above my head, that it seemed more like owls than something else's.
Mm-hmm.
But then why is it hanging about near an airport? And Dave wants to come in on that. But yeah, the TR-3B thing just gets me in the sense that people claim with 100% that, oh yeah, that's what that is. And it's, you don't know.
No, but yeah, one thing I wanted to mention was the Calvin sighting.
Yes.
You know, the case that's been shut away for 50 years.
Again.
Yep. You know, I originally thought that was because there were still people involved who were named in that, you know, high-ranking officials, which didn't want their names put out there, so that's why they shut it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think apparently it is some kind of secret black tech, which when the US found out that MI5 or MI6 or, you know, the MOD had images of it, apparently they went absolutely ballistic because their secret craft had been photographed, and B, it was talked about in the UK press.
Interesting. Yeah. Am I not right in saying that secret, that photo of that secret craft, the apparent original photo has a like a one of the UK fighter jets alongside it as well?
Yeah, I think it did. Where people think, oh, that's been scrambled to try and it's being chase it down,
or it's being escorted.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, 50 years time, we'll find out that it was the Astra or Aurora or whatever.
Or maybe
I'll
sooner.
Probably be dead. I'll probably be dead in 50 years time.
Or listen, we might find out sooner. But guys, let's go around the doors then for non-human tech. I think this, I can't see Dan giving us a high score. But Dan, I'm going to start with you. So on a 1 to 10?
10. No, I'm kidding. I'm going to go for a 5 for this one, simply because I'm going to be sensible. I really don't think it is. I really, really don't think it is. But
and like I said, though, that's not to say that some of this, that what people see and mistake things for, wouldn't be human technology that were that's far in advance or way far in advance. But on the whole,
exactly,
yeah,
exactly. I just think that it's the physics leap from kind of, you know, looking at a B-52 flying through the sky as a black project to something like the Tic Tac. We're talking thousands of years of development. Like this isn't a small feat. Whereas the B-52 still made sense according to what we knew about flight. It just exploited those things to do.
Can I just put to you though, thinking of similar scales, what about then when you look at a cell phone or a mobile phone, depending where you are in the world, from the 80s compared to an iPhone now? Is that not an incredible leap to go from the brick with the little antenna to now having literally that interface in your hand?
I'd say it depends. I mean, it's incredible size-wise that in my hand is something more powerful than took us to the moon. But at the same time, the only thing that's changed is how good we are at precision. The principles are still the same. We're just getting more and more precise with how we apply them. You know, so the phone from the 80s would have had transistors that were 5,000 times bigger than the transistors in the new iPhone chip that has like trillions of them packed in there. It's still the same principles. It's just going smaller. And that's still a big feat, but it's a world away from coming up with an entirely new principle.
And that's fair. John, I'll ask you for your score then, 1 to 10, non-human tech.
I'm going to go 8. Non-human tech. I'm going to give the 2 there because Dave made a good point. I'm going to give him the 2 between 8 and 10.
And Dave, what are you going for?
Are we talking about human tech or non-human tech? This is stuff that we've created.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, so top secret human tech, yeah.
Right. Oh, no.
Yeah, sorry, John. Yeah, my bad. Sorry. It is now well after midnight in the UK for those who listen to this in the future, who will be listening to this going, God, they actually talked about this? Yeah, we know what this is now. But yeah, so sorry. So were you going for the 2?
I'll go for a 2. I believe it's alien tech. It's extraterrestrial or mold or whatever. You know, it's not ours, basically.
Yeah, my bad. I won't even edit that out to make myself sound better. And Dave, for top secret human tech.
I'm going to have to sit on the fence with my feet dangling on one side of the alien tech. So I don't know, 4, purely because of Operation Paperclip and the fact that some of the stuff in the sky could be, you know, developed technology from, you know, way back when, like the Horton brothers built the flying boomerang, which became the prototype for the B-2 bomber.
Awesome. Okay, so one more main theory to discuss, then I want your thoughts on a potential mix of a few as I discussed right back at the start. So one of the listeners actually brought this up, and I totally missed it off, and this is something that I've talked about a few times on the show. And I will come to Dan first for this one. The idea that this is a simulation, if you want to go Matrix, if you want to think of it that way, if you want to think of it as a big game of The Sims is being played and we are The Sims, you know, that we're in some kind of simulated environment. What's your thoughts and your take on that one?
I'm really fond of this idea. It doesn't have to not be true, even if the other things are. You know, we could still be in a simulation and there could still be extraterrestrials. It's a reflection of the times we live in, I think, that we talk about these things in terms of kind of computer games and things like that. That's what we're plugged into all the time. We've got, you know, screens, computers, it's all about simulations. And I bet in 100 years, they'll talk about it in a way that we can't even fathom right now. I think even in another way, kind of scientifically, there's a conversation we could be, you know, kind of holographic projections. I'm not sure if any of you guys have come across this, which is still a simulation. We're just not plugged into a computer per se. We can even go as strange as talking about concepts. We touched on tribes earlier, and there are tribes that talk about us like we're almost like life is a dream. It's just an experience that's not real that we just kind of go through. And that's kind of very similar to the simulation hypothesis. But I wonder where the Neos are, if we are in a very computer gamey simulation. I'd say that one of the things that always kind of keeps me tuned into the simulation hypothesis is the observer effect in physics, where if you watch the particle, it does something different. That is almost like we would load a game to ourselves, for ourselves, only load what we see and what we can interact with, and loading anything else would be a waste.
Yeah, like right now, does my mum actually exist where she is in Glasgow?
Exactly. I mean, you kind of think about it. You kind of think about, like, the only interactions before tonight, before I actually saw, you know, Gacha in the flesh, it was the only interactions we had were, like, on Twitter over a phone, and that's just pixels. So how do we know at the other end of that conversation is a real person, or is it just an algorithm that's been trained to interact with the questions that we're asking? To be honest, if someone's written a video game that programs all these different lives, there are a lot of disappointed people out there when they find that out, because their lives are totally banal.
So I suppose it begs the question, though, about, you know, who's playing the game? Is there a set of players there?
Oh.
Is it more than one? And this is something I talked about in one of my shows, and I like when you talk about simulation theory, and I'm a bit with it, that is it a case of, you know, maybe four people start a game of The Sims, one's really interested in playing it, one is just happy to sit and watch, one is really interested at first but then loses interest and kind of falls away, and someone else is just there, not really interested but quite happy just to mess it up and just have everything, you know, fall apart. I think we all remember playing things like Sim City or, you know, Sim Theme Park, Sim Hospital at some point, one of those types of games growing up, and you start off with the best intentions, and then as things get a little bit more complicated and things get a bit difficult, you can wipe it and start a new game, or you can just go full, you know, devil mode and just destroy your creation. And if someone is playing right now, then I feel the one who's kind of want to take over and have things just go to hell are kind of running things at the minute when you look at the state of the planet. But I suppose that's a more worrying aspect of it, that, you know, if someone is in charge of the whole thing and that it's not just machines in the background letting it run.
I mean, did you play Sid Meier's Civilization series? I think it's up to Civilization 6, where it's just basically you start in the year 4000 with a little tribe, you build a village, build a town, and then you have to develop technology, research science, go to war if you want, explore new lands, create more cities. I mean, this is a huge game series that's been played since like the 1990s. And that could be kind of what we are going through, like you said. You know, you've got people just kicking back, building worlds, creating cities, researching tech, and then suddenly they want to go to war with somebody.
I'm waiting on someone paying for the DLC upgrade for me, that I get a lot more cash, a new car and a new house that I can play with. So,
yeah, brand new skin.
Absolutely, yeah. And obviously they've designed this character with a flaw, that my waist is far too big. So if they could just edit that as well, that would be great. John, I'll come back in then on yourself. That simulation theory, what are your thoughts then on the idea that it's all potential simulation?
It's an interesting theory. I like it. It's really deep, and trying to like box it in or explain it is kind of difficult. But at the same time, I think that when you think about these kinds of theories, people always try to like create, just look at it from like a technical aspect, or like super, oh yeah, we're in a simulation, so it's all super, like we're in some crazy computer that's super smart. But if you just look at like what a lot of people believe, generally they believe that there is like a creator. So there you go. There's your game creator. There's the guy who created the simulation. And everyone's around the world thinks there's some kind of source that created our existence. You know, even if you believe in evolution, there's still a lot of people that are like, yeah, but there's an energy that connects us all. There's the creator. So I don't know if it's so like, you know, I read this book once. It was about, I can't remember like the name of the book or anything, because I bought it like at a used bookstore here in Argentina. It was in Spanish. I was buying it to practice reading in Spanish. And it was basically comparing the human body to a machine, and it would compare the human, but like to rudimentary machines, not like super technological machines. It was like, you know, to a car motor. So it would like compare each part of your body to a different part of that of a machine that we use. And I mean, we're basically biological machines. So if something ever did create us, I don't know if it has to go so deep as to be like the Matrix, where we're like in a actual video. It might be something, that we are like super advanced biological computers that reproduce themselves and just take over the, you know, if you think about human beings, that's basically what we are. We're like super advanced biological computers on this planet.
Yeah, you make a good point. And I joke before about, I say a joke, like I do need to lose a few I'm carrying Christmas weight from 5 years ago still on me at the minute. But you're trained, aren't you, when you need to try and change your mindset that food is fuel, your body is a machine, and you have to eat to fuel your body. There's different things you can put in there. You know, there's different grades of fuel you can put in your car. Some are better than others. You get some people who make their own fuel at home, which isn't recommended, but you know, your car might run for a while. It's also illegal. Don't try that, folks. But yeah, so it's that whole idea that you're still just a machine that needs some sort of energy source to create energy and have an output. And yeah, so I can buy that. Simulation theory, though, like I like you make the point, though, John, that people tend to think of it as, I suppose, the Matrix has given us that point, hasn't it, from 1999, that's what a simulation may be. We're all plugged in, and these machines harvest us. And Matrix, I love the trilogy. I don't have anything bad said about any of the films, but that's another podcast for another day. Like you say, though, that's one way to think of it, but you don't know that. And a way you can't even conceptualize or understand that we're part of some sort of simulation or some sort of experiment or some sort of game on a totally different scale, a different level. As part of simulation, I'll just bring in, and I'll come to Dan on this one, that, you know, I suppose there's the zoo theory, that are we just someone sort of experiment? If you want to go simulation, it's not a huge leap to go that we're an experiment in that sense. I know it was touched on earlier.
You know, if we're an experiment, yeah, I mean, it could be very possible that we are an experiment. I think, we are missing that, you know, that piece between our chimpanzee brothers, or, you know, the things we evolved from, that they can't seem to explain. And also, I mean, guys, we could talk about simulations and the, like look at it in a technological format, but I just keep looking back at it. And I think of like this rudimentary basic idea that like we basically live in a world that's completely planned out for us, where we can follow. We're restricted to what we can really do and where we can go. We are living in kind of like a simulation, but it's not the kind of simulation people are imagining. It's a different kind of simulation. It's you live this life that, you know, lots of lives don't have that much purpose. You know, we talk about Einstein and Nikola Tesla and how many Bobs and Chris's out there that we've never heard of, or Jacks, you know. We're limited to the experience that we have because for some reason or another, the path that we've been on all these years has done that to ourselves. Like, we can't even survive. We don't even know how to make fire. Daniel knows how to make a fire, but none of us do. I'm saying that's right there. That's like just showing you that whatever led us in this direction, it's kind of like a simulation without the, you know, I don't even really look at it in like a computer matrix kind of format. I look at it kind of like an experiment, like you said, but maybe it's not really an experiment. Maybe it's just, you know, it's just what we're here for is just to live and reproduce and continue to do what we're doing. And that's it.
Dan, do you want to come in on that one at all?
Just the question one more time.
So again, just simulation, experiment theory. I can't remember if it was you, Dan, I spoke to about this, but the idea that if it was some sort of simulation, then why would you make like stars and planets and the universe, but then is it a case that it's not the Earth that's simulated, it's the entire universe that's a simulation? And like you said, it doesn't then exclude the fact that you've got ETs and spacecraft, because all that could then just be part of the simulation. They could all be in it with us, or potentially.
Yeah, I mean, we could essentially just be in many, many multi-layered simulations. It makes me think of Rick and Morty, where he uses the universe for a car engine, and then in that car engine there's another scientist that's made another universe for his car engine, and it just kind of keeps going down, and implies the question, at some point, are they in a car engine in their world? And I guess that comes back to everything being relative, like John said. It's our experience of it. I really liked your point about the world kind of being a simulation we choose to participate in, kind of, you know, that like 9 to 5 kind of standard world we think of is it very much a simulation in a way.
It doesn't need to be so deep and so like, oh, let's figure it. No, we are literally living in like a planned world. Like, there is a program and we're living it every single day. When we wake up, we have to pay taxes. There's no free, there's no free food. Like, we have to pay to live. We're living in a world where we're programmed to live a certain way, vote for people to tell us what to do. So we are kind of living in like a game where we are like the Sims, you know, we can't really make our own choices. We think we can.
I'm going to ask a question, and I'll start with Dave, come round, Joel, then get your scores on this one, okay? Dave, how do you think people would react if it was announced, this was the disclosure, okay, well, we've found out that we are living in, and let's just use the basic, we're living in a simulation, we're in a holographic computer-made construct, we can't get out of it, it's a simulation.
The world's going to go GTA.
Think so.
Total GTA, yeah. I mean, it's like you said earlier about the, you know, the people who are in control of the game. You're just going to get the one guy who presses the button to go, yeah, fine, all hell breaks loose. I think, because if people find out they're not in control of their lives for real, you know, all right, we have politicians and we have certain rules and laws and social structures, but we accept that to a point. But if someone comes along and tells you, actually, you're just an NPC, or, yeah, someone's actually controlling your life. I mean, there have been films made about this. There's one, you almost get like Ready Player One, where you enter this other universe where you are who you want to be and who you think you are, and you can do basically anything you want. And, you know, there's an end game, but it's still experiencing the kind of in-game arena as you want to. But then I think there's a film with Gerard Butler where he suddenly finds out that he's being controlled by this, you know, 10-year-old kid with a headset sitting in a chair eating Cheetos and drinking Dr. Pepper. And, you know, he's questioning the actual decisions this kid's making and why he's controlling his life and why he's letting him die at certain points. I mean, do we really want somebody, you know, like an 8-year-old interdimensional extraterrestrial just sitting in front of a PS12, you know, deciding when we get up, how long we stay up, what we eat, where we go to work? Or is he going to be like away from the keyboard for years on end where we just do nothing with our lives? I think if people find out that way, then yeah, there's going to be carnage.
John, do you want to come in on that then, Gaucho? Let us know. What do you think would happen if we find out that it is a simulation? What happens to society, the world?
You know, after the pandemic and stuff, I don't think the society and the world's really ready for much. I think we are ready for, we think we're ready. You know, we're obviously all like, yeah, of course, we can band together and do this. But if they found out they were in a simulation, I mean, they can't even understand to respect people's opinions and religions and sexes. Imagine if they found out they were in a simulation.
Everyone would run out and buy all the toilet paper. It would be gone.
Oh yeah, for sure. I'm saying, that's why I was trying to like not get all technical with the idea of living in a simulation. I feel like the craziest part is I truly think that we are kind of living in a, you know, a simulated world. It's not like a real world. It's all just follow this line, do this. Yeah. At the end, if you don't go to this school, you're not going to get this job. And if you get this job, you're just going to make this much money and then you can retire and you die. So like we are kind of already living in that simulation. You know, there isn't much control. There is like, you have choice. You have a choice. You might get lucky. But depending on the situation you were put in because of the environment that you live in, because of the laws that were set to you, because of where you grew up, where you were born, because of what level you were on, you know what I mean? Where, what version of the game you were experiencing. Some people are PS5 and some people are just Nintendo. It sucks. But I'm saying, yeah, I don't think people could handle that at all. At all. Like,
fair. And Dan?
It would be chaos. I totally agree with the guys. You'd have to figure out who was ready to be woken up and approach them and carefully tell them, and now we're into the plot of the Matrix. So yeah.
Cool. So listen, guys, what I'm going to ask then is your scores on this one, and then we'll have a quick discussion on the idea that it's a mix of a lot of these things, okay? Then for the listener questions, or sorry, listener theories part, we'll do it more as a quick fire going round it, because a lot of it we've discussed throughout this, so some of you might see some of these theories being very similar to what we've discussed, okay, if that's good with you. So Dan, on 1 to 10 for simulation.
John's idea is really resonated with me, so I've got to go for a 10. Even if we're not plugged into computers, we're in a simulation. John's totally right,
and I did like how he described that as well. I'll go with you on that one. That I was keen on John saying, you know, step away from the simulation as we understand the simulation, and that so much of it is simulated and pre-programmed, and you can look at life as having an algorithm to it. And I can't remember who I spoke to quite a while ago. It may have been Sean Cahill, but even talking about the your genetics as they dive down into the human genome and atoms, that there's memory and storage within these, and is literally every cell and atom in your body already pre-programmed for what it's going to do, when, you know, so that's all there. God, it gets deep at almost 1 a.m. Dave, 1 to 10 on simulation?
Yeah, without going into the theory of existence, then, yeah, John put it so succinctly that it's got to be like an 8.
I like it. And John, simulation theory, 1 to 10.
Thank you, guys. I didn't think I was going to have that effect when I explained it that way. But a 10. You know, I've always felt that way since I was a little kid.
10. Okay, awesome. Okay then, guys. Like, so just before we move on to the quick fire listener theories, what has been mooted about, again, Tom DeLonge, we're all a fan of Tom to various degrees. He mentioned that reality, the phenomenon, everything in the universe is so much stranger than we can think. What about the idea that the phenomenon is a mix of a lot of these put together? Dave, I'll come to you first on this one. So as for me, I'm looking at, yeah, there are potentially craft coming from other planets that more than likely would be probes or second, third generation clones, you know, beings that aren't really, you know, sentient as such as we would know it. But then the tic-tacs are interdimensional, multidimensional, crypto-terrestrial, and it's all in there. And you can lump in ghosts, shadow people, Bigfoot, all of that. It's just one weird, wonderful universe.
Yeah, I think you've actually probably hit it on the head there. I mean, it is definitely a mix. You know, ghosts and poltergeists, things like that. You are talking like interdimensionals, multidimensional. You got time slips, things like that. You know, we haven't even approached the aspect of time in all this conversation either, which is probably another 3-hour conversation anyway. But yeah, I mean, throughout history, you've got, you know, the phenomenon presents itself in various different ways. I mean, you look at the research in Jacques Vallée in his, you know, in his book Passport to Magonia and Wonders in the Sky with Chris Horback. You know, they're talking about the little people, you know, fairies and elves of folklore. Are they, you know, the historical greys or the Ebens or, you know, things like that? Our minds, as we develop and as we evolve through history, it teaches us different things. We recognize, you know, what, you know, Arthur Conan Doyle recognized as fairies, or, you know, Algernon Blackwood or Arthur Machen, you know, the writers of, you know, the early 20th century, they were talking about, you know, the same kind of things that we are talking about today when it comes to the phenomenon. But yeah, we're seeing the same thing, but we're putting a different spin on it. I mean, people were seeing airships back in the 1800s before there were airships. You know, you got like phantom trains, which were seen back in the 17th century, and people did, you know, trains hadn't existed. You know, they hadn't been invented at that point in time. So I think there's a whole mix of the phenomena, and we got the trickster concept as well, where it just plays tricks on the human mind, and we haven't quite developed the mental capacity to recognize it for what it is yet.
Interesting. And again, the trickster thing is something that comes up more and more, doesn't it? And
yeah,
the aspect of the phenomenon playing with people. Skinwalker Ranch is well documented, and I'll have an announcement pretty soon on Twitter about a guest that will be coming on from Skinwalker Ranch that's just came up today, which I'm quite excited about, so I'll keep that one until it's 100%. But yeah, that's really interesting thought there, Dave. Dan, do you want to come in on the mix idea? I know that's, again, this is something we talk about off air, isn't it, quite often, and text about as well.
Yeah, it is. It's as Dave said, there's a lot of very good work by very respectable people who have gathered all these cases that seem to suggest we are seeing something that's presenting itself to us, which brings us right back to that ATIP slide 9 and instantaneous sensor disassembly. Only in this example, the sensor is the human mind or consciousness. And when once this is on the table, you know, the ability to show somebody whatever you want them to see, all the kind of esoteric subjects like, you know, Bigfoot, ghosts, phantom ships, you know, you name it, shadow people, light people, angels, all these things, they all kind of fall into the same category with that single ability that we know they have. So yeah, I'd be remiss to ignore this theory. I'm a big fan of it.
And John, where are we in the mix?
I am on the same side as Dave and Daniel on this one. I've always believed that there is a link between it all, right? I've tried to figure it out a million times. Somehow my UFO research takes me always back to the occult. I don't know why, but it always happens. And then when I get there, I have to start all over again and go back to the beginning again. But it always happens, and it's there. I mean, it's pretty obvious that the paranormal is all tied together. High strangeness is a thing. And it could be, like Daniel was saying, this information from slide 9, where it is this trickster element, like Dave brought up, that is manipulating us and making us see what it wants to see, or what it wants us to see. But, you know, then again, I always have this moment where maybe what I was saying earlier about how I'm not like, I don't know if I said it while we were on the podcast or before, but we were talking about consciousness and C5, and I was saying that for some reason I'm very like nuts and bolts, even though I don't think I am. So there's moments where like this idea that it's something that's manipulating us, and there is no real like it's all the same source, right? It kind of throws me off a little bit, but then when I think about it a little more and I come down to earth, right, and I try to think about it on a ground level, again, we get back to the same thing where like the whole idea of the universe and everything around us is that there is a source. So if there is a element of this, maybe it's the same element that we believe that is all, you know, the created existence. And it's just the yin or the yang element of it. That's just the trickster element, you know, which is kind of crazy to think about, but I don't know. I think it's all tied together. And I think it makes it a lot more fascinating to think about when you start to put the pieces of the puzzle together and think that the Mothman might actually have something to do with Bigfoot and that UFOs as well. So yeah, I agree with everything everyone said.
So one last time then, gents, we're going to go with the scores. John, 1 to 10 for the phenomenon being a mix of craft coming from other planets, interdimensions, multi-dimensions, different realities, potentially crypto, ultra, some secret human tech in there, simulation, 1 to 10.
Let's go with an 8, right?
Was an 8.
Yeah. Just
awesome. Just to spice it up, yeah. Dan?
Can I go for 11 again?
I mean, it'll probably help with some of the scoring, yeah. But yeah, awesome. 11 from Dan. He likes that one. I know. I do you know what? If anyone before this, I could have pinned Dan on giving a really high score. I thought it would have been in the mix section. So yeah, you've not let me down on that one. And Dave, one last score, please.
Yeah, I think because there's a couple of things I'm not totally up on, I'd have to get like 8, 9 tops. But what I will say is, John, have you ever checked out the skull experiments?
What was that?
Have you ever checked out the skull experiments? S-C-O-L-E.
I'm typing it in now. Okay. What is it? Let me know. Yeah.
Yeah, some paranormal experiments done in Britain in the 80s and the 90s. And if you look into that, then, you'll find that very interesting.
Okay, definitely, I will. Thank you for suggesting that.
No worries.
So, gents...
And any of the listeners as well.
Oh, yeah, and for any listeners, absolutely. Gents, before we jump on to a quickfire listener theories and just get some comments from you on those, looking at the scoring... you've went with inter and multidimensional being the favoured of all the theories. After that, it was only one in it that was crypto and ultra-terrestrial. We then had a tie for third place for simulation, which I'm surprised that it was scored so highly, and also that it's a mix of them as well. So really interesting. And you know what? I've really enjoyed that as well. So listener theories, I'm going to bring them up on my Word document and I will just read the theory and I'll go around in order. So Dave, if you could take the first one, what do you think about the idea that ETs have bases deep underground, inside mountains, deep down in ocean floors, in the poles? This was from Cesar Suarez, and he thinks all the logistics is there for that, and believes a lot of these entities are artificially intelligent beings inhabited by souls, artificial bodies that can last thousands of years.
Yeah.
Yeah. there was a lot in that one there, yeah.
I mean, definitely bases, I'd say probably more likely to be under the ocean than under the ground. The poles, probably not so much.
I like it. Cannot comprehend. This is one that we touched on earlier. But John, average guy UFO.com as UFO dad one, he said he'd like to hear a little bit about our short discussion around our shortcomings and understanding the phenomenon, and we're looking at it from a human perspective that's inherently flawed. It's no different from my dog speculating what I do when I leave for work. So the idea that we simply cannot understand what's going on at all.
Yeah, it's very possible that we don't understand what's going on at all. I mean, I think we talked about that earlier. I still to this day think like we truly lit people on fire for, you know, bringing new ideas to the table that ended up becoming like truth, right? We hung people for stepping outside of the box. So it's very possible that in this time, and maybe every time that we ever think of throughout history, we are not living in a logical or sane perspective of what's going on. So, yes, it's very possible that we do not know at all what's going on.
I'm going to bring the next one to Dan. This was from A Waif Soul on Twitter, who gave me an 8-part epic, which thank you very much. And a lot of it we discussed, and it was actually this tweet that made me put the simulation aspect into the discussion. But Dan, I would love to know your thoughts on one of the questions that were asked about if this was a simulation, what do you think about the ethical aspect of there being death, shooting, you know, all the bad stuff that happens? Are we unethical for playing along, or is the creation of the simulation unethical for putting that in there in the first place?
I'm a big fan of approaching issues in the world with the mantra of compassion for the conned, contempt for the con man. So in this instance, I'm going to choose to throw the person that created the simulation in jail for doing so. I don't think the actions are particularly on the players, I guess, if they don't know they're in the game.
Awesome. Dave, back to yourself. So Mike suggested that Whitley Strieber, or Strieber, called them visitors rather than aliens. Do you think he was ahead of his time in that way of thinking?
Well, no, not really, because the word alien just means something that is strange to us. So visitors makes perfectly sense, because if they are coming from somewhere, then they are just visiting, or, you know, whether it be through space or through time or wherever.
From alien, the sea, yep.
Yeah, I mean, why would they not be visitors?
Cool. Carl, and this is one we discussed, but John, that our relationship with the phenomenon is symbiotic on several levels, so there is a connection between us and the phenomenon.
Yes. I mean, I make the argument that for some reason they find us very important, because if they are so technologically advanced, they could have just figured out what they needed a long time ago and stopped abducting people, stopped coming out and taking samples of the environment, or using, you know, craft to scan the land and all this kind of stuff that people theorize is going on. But the abduction phenomenon, in my opinion, is very real. And I don't understand why a super intelligent, advanced race would continue to use people in that manner without, like, figuring out a way to just maybe just keep one of us and use one of us, or clone a few of us and just experiment on those. I don't get it. You know what I mean? So I do think there is a big tie between us and them, and there is some kind of importance that we're not noticing. It may be the anthropomorphic nature. It may be that they are us from the future. It may be so many things, but there is something there that links us to them in a way that we are not really paying attention to.
I like that. Let me just add in there, though. You made me think, John, even at this late hour, as we record, that you say about cloning some of us and experimenting on them. Maybe they are doing that and the clones don't realize they're clones. Yeah. Next one for you, Dan. This is from Dustin Bagwell. If UFOs travel through dimensions, do you think it possible they're letting other things into our dimension, say through a rip or leak that let paranormal entities enter, something like what's going on at Skinwalker Ranch?
I like that question. I'm a big Stephen King fan, and that is essentially The Mist in a nutshell, and the overarching theory of the Dark Tower, right? That we have all these dimensions and they're traveling between them. They have a word for it. I think it was thin ears they used, where you could kind of see the doorways between dimensions and walk through them. But there would be a space in between where kind of they said our nightmares lived, and it was full of creatures, which sure sounds a little like Lovecraft, right?
Yeah, space between spaces.
And we'll see.
It's the space we were talking about earlier that you brought up when we asked if they were from another dimension or another reality. It's a space between spaces.
I like that, bringing it right back round as well. And back to yourself, Dave, last three. Craig, has said that he believes they've lived here all the time that we have, or at least in between. So maybe crypto or interdimensional for him. He doesn't think it's quite within our scope of understanding, but he couldn't rule out ET either. Would you go along with that from what we looked at the scoring?
Well, it depends how long he thinks we've been living here.
Oh.
On a controversial.
There's another podcast.
Yeah, I mean, if you read Michael Cremo's book, Forbidden Archaeology, you know, he goes back into, you know, discoveries of humanoid skeletons going back millions of years. So it's not within, you know, well, it's not outside the realms of possibility that, you know, extraterrestrials or whoever could have been visiting this planet for, well, since year dot. When that goes back to them coming, you know, just checking up on the planet every now and again, taking research notes and going back and reporting findings.
I like it. John, your last question is from Luke. And what he sent in a couple of questions, but I'm going to make it a little more compact for the late hour. He talks about Bob Bigelow and more recently James Fox, both using statements along the lines of, they are already among us. What do you think Bob Bigelow and James Fox mean when they say that they are among us already?
It could be two things, right? It could be one thing I think I brought up on the podcast last time we talked was Robert Bigelow saying that they're sitting right under our noses. It's right in front of us. And it could be this idea that, you know, the gods and this whole story, that this whole history that exists is actually the phenomena. And then that would mean that every mosque, every religious temple that exists around the world is actually an alien temple. And that changes the whole scope of what you're living every day. You know what I mean? That changes everything for a lot of people. I think it could be that. And I think it could also be this humanoid aspect, right? We see the anthropomorphic aspect and we know that there's like the hybrid program and we've heard stories of humanoid looking aliens throughout history. If there are humanoid looking aliens, I mean, they'd be living among us. That just was plain and simple. If there are humanoid looking, if there's one out there, he's living among us. You know what I mean? It's not we'd have to disregard the humanoid alien theory, you know, where they look like us. Because if there is a species that looks just like us, maybe we are created in its image. And also maybe they are walking among us. I don't know.
Yeah. And last one for yourself, Dan. Derek sent in discussing the story of Atlantis. He believes is true, or potentially could be true, that survivors helped South Americans and Egyptians build pyramids, other structures that we know we see all around the world, which just seem to tie up. Even though when they were built, these people in these different continents would have had no idea of each other. So potentially, if they went to live underground or out of sight, they'd be so advanced now, several thousand years head start on us. And Dan, I think it was yourself that mentioned that earlier as well, that, you know, if they had a tic-tac, what could they have now? What are your thoughts on that, that they can now then use huge amounts of energy to shift space, time, gravity and whatnot?
Yeah, like I said earlier, big fan of the idea, especially when it comes to the underground stuff. One of the things that I remember from the Nimitz case was where the objects were disappearing to, which was near Guadalupe Island. And right near where they were disappearing, there are these massive unexplored lava tubes that just head into the planet. Like, is it a coincidence that they disappeared into the water near there? Or is that an easy way of getting to home base?
I like it. And the last one, I'm going to not answer this because we've discussed some of it, but Shauna sent us in some really interesting thoughts and we've discussed a little bit of it. But I'm going to finish the podcast reading her last couple of sentences. You've got to wonder whether or not an alien race shares our concept of good and evil. That's probably how we'll judge them. So again, can we be absolutely sure they'll come out of hiding with good intentions? In the 2016 movie called Arrival, here lies that movie's paradox. The fear is all our own. If anything, these aliens came to share their wisdom, to forge an alliance, to make humans better off. They came because they believe in our species. Too bad that we don't, at least not yet. gentlemen, thank you very much for your time. It has been a pleasure recording with you. It's been almost 3 hours. Thank you to the listeners for listening along as well. I'll just say a final goodbye to each of you individually. Dave, thank you very much.
No problem. Cheers, Andy. It's been great.
John, thank you.
Thank you, Andy. Had a great time, man.
Awesome. And Dan, thank you very much.
Thank you. I promise to give things reasonable scores in the future.
And thank you, listeners, once again. Hope you enjoyed. Please send us feedback. Remember, check out Shadow to Your Mind magazine with Dave. Make sure you're following Dan Zignal on Twitter and checking out his Redbubble store as well. Some cool new products I've seen some early prototypes of that should be coming out soon for you too. And
Hopefully.
And of course, John, the Undead Gaucho, as you know him, check out and subscribe his YouTube channel too, folks. That is all for this week's show. Thank you very much for listening. Please remember to leave the podcast a review on your chosen platform. You can like, retweet and subscribe. That would all be very much appreciated. The shows are being uploaded onto YouTube as we speak more and more. You can sign up at patreon.com/thatufopodcast to access the shows ad-free as well. Please get in touch on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, That UFO Podcast. Of course, on Twitter, it's at UFOUAPAM. And again, folks, as always, keep looking up. You never know what you might see.
It wasn't a Tic Tac and not quite a saucer. More like a hubcap designed by Chaucer. A little baroque and quite steampunk, like Alice was playing bass for the Parliament of Funk. The little fucker hovered right outside of my window, and when I shoved out the screen, he made it an issue. I don't think he expected me to see his ass, but I'd had some champagne and smoked a little around. Meditative game of state full on meta. Can't imagine how it could have been any better. I got to the top of the stairs and there he was. Like, you awake? I was about to abduct you, cuz. I jumped back and nearly kissed myself. And I climbed out the window after the elf. And I woke up in my bed and there was something on my head. And everything was weird and everything was red. And I called up my boys. They thought this was noise. They thought it was a dream. They thought it was my toys. They thought it was my problems. And they think I should take care of me. And I don't know what to do because it doesn't really scare me. If you really want to know who I think I'd be, I guess you and me and us and we and him and her and that and she and that thing over there and what's that, Jake? If you're being serious, open your mind, consider your heart, consider time, consider your space, consider your lies, consider your life, consider your eyes. Saucer.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Dutch Boy's DuraFighter is a premium interior paint and primer in one with a tough, lasting formula. It provides great scrub resistance and durability with remarkable hide and a smooth finish. Save big on Dutch Boy's DuraFighter paint at Menards and start your next project today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save.